Much has been written about the great English romantic poet Lord Byron, but little is known about his wife, Lady Byron. In fact, she's often been maligned by her husband's admirers. In Lady Byron and Her Daughters, Julia Marcus follows Anne Isabella Milbank, Lady Byron, through their tumultuous marriage and its aftermath when she was a pioneer in education and the mother of the math prodigy Ada Lovelace. The book is a shocking tale of love, genius, alleged incest, and lies. It's published by W.W. Norton, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Julia Marcus, the Director of Creative Writing and Professor of English at Hofstra University, back to our show. Welcome back.
Well, good to be here, Lynn.
Who was Lady Byron before she met Lord Byron?
She was Annabella Milbank from a very prominent family, and she was from the North Country. And the child of her parents' middle age, she was like this blessing, you know.
Wasn't she considered a good catch because she was an heiress?
Oh, yes. And not only an heiress, but in the Regency, the manners were so superficial and everyone just cared about either gaming or love. And when she came to London in 19 on her own, she was kind. She spoke her mind. She was very pretty. And she was an heiress, so she had a battalion of suitors.
And then Lord Byron had recently become famous for publishing his book-length poem, Childe Harold. Were they a likely match?
Not at all. Not at all. She was sort of a very idealistic person. And when she first met Byron or saw him at her cousin Carolyn Lamb's waltz, and she saw all these women fawning over him, she wrote a poem called Byron Mania, in which she said she hoped he'd be anything except an ape. So she kept her distance, though she was very attracted to him. Everyone was.
Well, he's very good looking. And they're all poets because Lady Carolyn Lamb also was a poet. But he'd had a shocking affair with her. She was married and had a child. Now I think people think the child was probably autistic.
Something like that, probably autistic.
And she was Annabella's cousin.
Exactly.
So Annabella must have been aware of all of that scandal.
Oh, yes, of course. The Regency was such a different period. And just because Annabella had a certain view of life and a certain idealism didn't mean that she wasn't a Regency woman. She certainly understood and was sophisticated. In fact, she said one time that she could always understand the darker natures of people. And I think that was true.
He had treated Lady Caroline quite poorly.
Yes.
Wouldn't that have been a warning to Annabella that he might not be good husband material?
Yeah. The thing was that Carolyn and Annabella got along fairly well, but it wasn't until Lady Byron finally separated because of mental cruelty. She knew about the incest. She knew about the
alleged incest.
Well,
you think
say
it
alleged.
Was incest?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And now that would have begun before.
Right.
Before Byron even met her?
Right. No. What happened was Lady Melbourne, her aunt, proposed for Byron to her. I don't know if Byron meant it seriously, but he found her a very attractive woman.
And asked
her aunt to propose. And at that point, she said no, you know. But 2 years later, she accepted him.
Well, before they were married, Byron wrote a letter, quote, "As to love, that is done in a week, provided the lady has a reasonable share. Besides, marriage goes on better with esteem and confidence than romance, and she is quite pretty enough to be loved by her husband without being so glaringly beautiful as to attract too many rivals." Was she aware that that was how he was entering the marriage?
No, not at all. And that was written to her aunt, her father's sister, and her aunt, Lady Melbourne, was quite a big figure at that time. She had affairs with everyone, including the Prince Regent, and her tongue was so sharp they called her the Thorn. And she and Byron, believe it or not, she was about 40 years older than he, but she also had a brief affair with him. At least that's what Byron told his wife later on. Yeah.
Well, Seems like almost everybody was having an affair with everybody.
Well, that was the idea.
This is pre-Victorian.
The Regency, I mean, I think it was actually true that you had an heir of the blood of your husband, and once that was done, you did what you want, as long as you were discreet. The problem with Byron was he wasn't discreet.
And was this something that was fodder for the general public? Was their inner circle aware of all the stuff that was going on? Would they have been the equivalent of today's tabloid stories?
Yeah. In a sense, Lord Byron was the first rock star. He was the first literary celebrity. And the newspapers were filled with things. Now, when she decided to marry him, you know, he wrote beautifully. His words were glorious, and she thought that he really loved her.
The marriage only lasted a year. What happened?
Cruelty, mental cruelty, and the.
What does mental cruelty mean in this case? He just said nasty things.
Well,
to her?
Let's see. When they got married, she went into the marriage carriage, and he said, "You thought I loved you? I'll show you. You've married a devil." That was the beginning.
Now, so he just said terrible things to her, but they had a child.
They had a child, of course, and they had a very active sex life. But, see, the reason he married both Lady Melbourne and his sister, Augusta Lee, with whom he had incest and the child, Medora, pushed him into marriage because the Regency was beginning to gossip about the possible incest, you see? So he had to marry that year, not 1814, and she, by that time, realized she loved him, and it's just really one of those unfortunate circumstances. She was the woman available that year.
I'm speaking with Julia Marcus, whose latest book is Lady Byron and Her Daughters, and you say daughters with an S, even though they only had one daughter.
One legitimate daughter, but later in life, Lady Byron rescued from certain death Medora Lee, who we assume is the child of Lord Byron and his sister's incest. And she introduced her to Ada as her half-sister, and that's another, I think, quite interesting part of her life and of her story.
Because she was so generous to a child who many other people would have been hated.
Yeah, well, she was the only one secretly who had been helping her through the years. And when she wrote to Ada and said she had a half-sister, she said when she first saw the child, she was 8 months old and still being nursed by Augusta. And she was so beautiful and so lively. And she said she was the only person there who wasn't miserable.
How was Lady Byron viewed by the public following their split? Did people blame her? Or did they blame Lord Byron?
That's a good question. They blamed Lord Byron because he stayed with his sister after she left. But what happened is the minute he left England, I mean, he refused to even see his daughter. He called her my instrument of torture. But the minute he left England, he started writing this beautiful poetry about how he missed his daughter and how he was torn from her. So through his poetry, he really changed the opinion of the world.
Did he leave to some degree to escape the glare of publicity?
Yes.
I mean, they weren't newspapers of the sort that we have today. Obviously, there weren't all the other things that would have spread rumors. But how many people were even aware of this story?
Well, the upper class, not the poor, not the working poor, who Lady Byron helped to educate through the rest of her life. But there were scandal sheets, and there were a lot of rumors.
How did she support herself financially after they separated?
She was an heiress. I mean, the thing is, how did he support herself? Through having, in the separation agreement, half of her money while he lived. She was the one who, through her mother, it's very unusual that a woman could inherit, but in her line, a woman could inherit, and she was an heiress. And she said, now that I have money, I will be able to do more for the poor. And that's what she did. She established schools in England for the working poor.
He left England,
yep.
But also people were in awe of his genius.
Right.
Do you think that if they knew just how mad he was and knew about the incest, that they would have admired him less?
I doubt it. I mean, he was this romantic hero, you know, and he really as she was very progressive in his political views, and I don't know. I sort of doubt it. To me, the thing that is the saddest is the cruelty and how he could never blame himself for his problems, but cast them on this young woman that married him in all good faith.
And then he lived in Italy for 7 years.
Yeah.
Was he living with one of these women?
Oh, yeah, Countess Guiccioli. I mean, women really chased after him. I don't think he was really that interested in women. And then at the end, when he inherited more money because Annabella's mother died, so he had a bigger inheritance, he wanted to liberate the Greeks from the Turks, and he set up a militia to go in and fight. But he died of fever before he could do anything.
But the Greeks still consider him a national hero.
Absolutely. I was there and watched that. He's a national hero. And when I was in the Republic of Georgia the other year for a conference, he's a liberal hero there.
Ada Lovelace, their daughter, is celebrated as a pioneer in computer programming. What did she do?
Yes, she wrote the first algorithm, really, with Charles Babbage. In fact, tonight I'm going over to Oxford. I'm going to be speaking on her. They're having a huge Ada Lovelace symposium to celebrate the 200th year of her birth. And what she did is this Charles Babbage, who, you know, steam was the microchip of the 19th century. And Charles Babbage invented what he called an analytical engine, which he believed could compute information, an engine run by steam. And she wrote notes to an article about it. Her notes, she wanted to prove that this could work, so she got Bernoulli numbers, and she wrote the first algorithm. And the United States military in the 1980s used a variation of that and called it Ada.
But she was applying it to horse racing.
After she did that, she became very Byronic. I mean, her mother was a mathematician. And after she did that, she said, oh, I can program the races as well. So she programmed races. To the only predictable result of that is that she lost a fortune.
Should we be surprised that some people have said she really wasn't the genius, that it was all Babbage?
It wasn't all Babbage. It was both of them. She was grandiose in a way, but torn between a father she never knew, who kept writing this wonderful poetry, and a mother who was so brilliant, and perhaps not as loving as the absent father. But she had genius. There's no doubt about that.
Wasn't the program she wrote also later used by NASA?
Yes, NASA. Absolutely.
Now, Lady Byron, Annabella, founded England's first cooperative school,
yeah,
now called the Ealing School of Art. Yeah. What was her philosophy of education?
Very, very progressive. She was absolutely against the fancy public schools of England, where boys were with the fagging system and with all of the brutality. There was no punishments in her school. Everything was done through mutual help and understanding. The master answered questions. The boys helped themselves. Nature was brought in when they were younger. The children learned to dance, to do art. It was progressive education.
And then in the 60s, it became an important part of the history of rock and roll.
Right.
Because Freddie Mercury, Pete Townsend, Ronnie Wood were all students.
Yeah,
there.
As I say, she seems never to be able to escape the bad boys. And it's on that school, the first of her schools, the Ealing Grove School, that there's a blue plaque commemorating what she did.
Well, Ealing is really the farthest west, northwest of London you can go.
Yeah.
So it's an area where mostly lower middle class people.
Right, right. Well, that's what her schools were for in her days.
Now, a surprising person comes into the story, Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Yeah, yeah.
How did they meet, the American abolitionist, novelist, and Annabella?
Well, you know, Harriet Beecher Stowe was much younger than she, but they corresponded. And some of the fugitive slaves, after the Fugitive Slave Act came and they could be returned to slavery, Lady Byron helped bring some of the fugitive slaves over to England to be educated in her schools. So they met first through abolitionist causes. Then after Uncle Tom's Cabin, Harriet Beecher Stowe came to London, and she said the person she most wanted to see was Lady Byron.
In 1856, 4 years before Lady Byron's death, there were rumors of a penny edition of Lord Byron's work that would again depict Lady Byron as cold and manipulative. So she asked Harriet Beecher Stowe to help her in a response, but Stowe didn't immediately help.
Well, the thing is, one of Lady Byron's problems is that she never said what she actually wanted. She waited for you to understand. So she asked for Harriet Beecher Stowe's opinion, should she write a fair description of the marriage. And she would only ask someone like Stowe because she knew Stowe loved her husband's work. She wasn't interested in any way defaming him. And Stowe, after looking over the material, advised her to wait until after her death and then have the memoir published. She had no idea that Lady Byron really couldn't write a memoir and was hinting that Stowe helped her. After her death, this Countess Guiccioli, by then married to a Frenchman who introduced her as Lord Byron's mistress.
She wrote her own memoir.
She wrote the memoir, and that memoir again defamed Lady Byron. So Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote a book, Lady Byron Vindicated, and immediately this woman, Stowe, who had the best reputation of anyone in the Western world, was completely defamed as well. How could she have said that Lord Byron committed incest? But, of course, that's Lady Byron had told her the true story, and she put that in print for the first time.
But now Lady Byron and Ada Lovelace are both having a bit of a renaissance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think has changed people's opinions?
It's very interesting. I would say Ada is having a great renaissance, and hopefully Lady Byron will start to have it too. Can you explain the times? I can't, but suddenly it's as if people are really interested in these brilliant women that sort of got lost to history because the world was so focused on male genius. And now seems to be a time when educated women and educated men are looking to reclaim these lives.
And Ada has even become part of the popular culture. Hasn't she become a kind of a figurehead in the steampunk movement?
Yeah, she's a steampunk heroine. They have her living to 80. The poor thing died the same age as Lord Byron at 36. But she's a heroine of steampunk literature, yes.
And what did Byron die at the very young age of 36?
Yeah, fever. He was in the plains of Greece, and all of a sudden he developed a fever and died.
I would have thought it was punishment for all of the terrible things he had done to so many women.
I think the poor man suffered. I think he suffered. He always thought he was old for his age. Lady Byron always had sympathy for him. She said, he suffered more in the marriage than I because he didn't love me.
He did supposedly say something about her on his deathbed, and so did his sister, but we don't know what they say.
Exactly. By then, they were both incoherent. And for Lady Byron, not being able to, be told what he said was, again, another problem.
Julia Marcus is a novelist, the author of three acclaimed biographies, and director of creative writing and a professor of English at Hofstra University. Her latest book, Lady Byron and Her Daughters, is published by Norton. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
It's a pleasure.